Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and Monday, as many of you know, was International Women's Day. And at the Kennedy Center in Washington this week, to observe that, some extraordinary women from around the world were honored with global leadership awards from the women's empowerment group Vital Voices. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and other dignitaries were in attendance, and we are very lucky to have with us now two of those honorees, one from Pakistan, one from Afghanistan, each of them a leader in educating women and building their country's economies in this moment of war and intense pressure for change. Andisha Farid is founder of the Afghan Child Education and Care Organization, AFSICO, which runs 10 orphanages in Afghanistan and Pakistan dedicated to, among other things, educating girls. She is said to be constantly on guard because of religious extremists targeting groups like hers. Roshani Safar is founder and managing director of the Kashf Foundation in Pakistan, supporting more than 300,000 Pakistani women with microfinance loans. Andisha, Roshani, thank you so much for visiting our studios. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And Roshani, let me start with you. You were trained in economics, I gather, at the Wharton School in Philadelphia, and you have a master's in development economics from Yale. Are you from Pakistan originally?
I am from Pakistan, very much so.
Very much so. And back again. So I guess after your education here in the U.S., you decided to return and do microfinance in the 1990s. How did you get started?
It didn't start that simply. It wasn't linear. It actually, you know, everything in life goes around circles. So I used to work for the World Bank, and I was very excited about looking at women's issues. That's why, you know, that's always been my inspiration, to help women become more in control of their lives. So while I was working at the World Bank, and sometimes fate intervenes in your lives, and I met Dr. Yunus by chance, and he...
The founder of the Grameen Bank. Dr. Yunus, who won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Absolutely.
For that work.
Absolutely, and he is such... He has such a kind aura about him that he really inspired me. And then I continued with him for a couple of, years, sending him all these questions and concerns I had about the development paradigm as it was is practiced by multilateral institutions. And one day I decided to leave my job, and I sent him an email saying, Dr. Yunus, by the way, I'm unemployed. What should I do? Question mark. And he just responded and said, I'll get back to you. So I assumed, you know, this was just what, you know, this was
being
it.
Nice.
And 1 week later, the local airline office called me and said, Madam, there is somebody called Muhammad Yunus who has sent you a ticket to Dhaka.
Ha.
So that's how I ended up on a journey to Dhaka and learning about microfinance and starting it in Pakistan.
Can you give our listeners an idea of the types of loans? How much money is in a typical microfinance loan that you make? And for what kinds of businesses, for example, if there are major trends?
Well, there are several things that microfinance does. The first thing it does is it tells women the power of money. So if I was to tell you an example of a woman who actually understood this really well, it's one of my clients called Shahida, who actually makes bicycle seat covers. And she started very small. She took a $100 loan from us and started a very small business. She was self-employed. She got a machine that allows you to sew leather. And she started sewing these bicycle seat covers and selling them within her community. Now, Shahida has a whole business where she's employed 5 other people. And she has actually diversified her market. For example, the bicycle seat covers she makes for the Punjab market have Bollywood stars on them. And the bicycles seats she sells in the Northwestern Frontier province has arms and ammunition on it. Mm. So, you know, just pictures of it. So she knows how to leverage the market. And that's one example. The other thing microfinance does is it tells people to take money and earn money, women in particular. Just take money and invest it in businesses that you know well and that you know will bring income back to your family. So to give you another example, you will see women now doing in several parts of the country, buying and selling cut flowers. This is something that's just started in, you know, roses and gladioli and things like that. So they've also started diversifying from traditional, very conventional cottage industry-based businesses to more high-value-oriented businesses. And that happens through time. The third thing we do, and I'll just stop after this, is we build solidarity. We teach women the power of organizing themselves. So we are telling them they're not alone. And there are so many anecdotes I can tell you where women have intervened in cases where there was domestic violence or where girls were not being sent to school. So our groups got together and sort of put pressure on the men to make sure that that doesn't happen in their communities.
That's wonderful. You do see
this is a non-linear process where you work with one woman who works with the family, who works with society, and that then has an impact on the economy.
That is great. Andisha Farid, co-founder of the Afghan Child Education and Care Organization. Tell us about the organization. 10 orphanages housing at least 180 children each. Why did you start this network?
I have seen all the children in Afghanistan suffering because of the 3 decades of war. So when I saw their situation, when I saw how hard it is for the children. They don't have anywhere to go. They don't have shelters. They lost their parents during the war. They don't have any place to go. So I wanted to do something for them. And I'm fortunate enough that I had the chance to go to school and be educated. So then I said, well, I became educated, so I have to pay it forward to my country. So I start to help the children.
So part of your mission is the education of girls, correct?
Yeah, because, of course, Afghanistan is a very male-dominated country. The girls, they are being abused sexually and emotionally. I want to educate the girls to empower the women. And the main time to educate the boys as well, because most of the time, the boys, they are forced to become soldiers because they join the Taliban because of lack of education. And if we educate both boys and girls, we can solve many problems in Afghanistan.
Listeners, we can take a few phone calls for both our guests, Roshena Zafar, founder and managing director of the Kosh Foundation in Pakistan, who is speaking first, and Andisha Farid, founder of the Afghan Child Education and Care Organization in Afghanistan and also in Pakistan. You have some of your facilities in Pakistan, right?
Sure, yeah.
And our phone number, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post a comment to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Andisha, I read an article that said you are on guard because religious extremists target women's groups in Afghanistan if you work with girls. Is that true?
This is true. Working in Afghanistan and being active as a woman in Afghanistan is extremely difficult. Biggest challenge for the moment is the security, not only for women, for everybody. The bomb blasts on the street threats everybody's life every day. For a woman to work in a country like Afghanistan, it's extremely difficult. We receive death threats even. We receive phone calls to stop us to move forward to help the children or, in the meantime, to help women.
And I gather that your orphanages also have children from diverse backgrounds and you work to teach them respect for one another. Where do your children come from?
We have children from all over Afghanistan. We have children from different ethnicity in our orphanages. We have children from different religion and languages in Afghanistan because ethnicity conflict was a very big issue in 1990s, and even now it's an issue in Afghanistan.
Ethnic conflict?
Yeah, ethnic conflict. We have children from, we put together children from different ethnic so that they learn that they are Afghan. Doesn't matter they are from, they are Azara or Pashtun. They can live together to join together to build Afghanistan.
Let's take a phone call that's coming in from Lanvi in Manhattan. This is for Roshani. Lanvi, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. We have a program that's very similar to what your guest has in Vietnam and the border of Cambodia. And with respect to micro lending, we found that the biggest problem was that the money that went to the women we helped ended up getting taken away by their husbands or their husband's family because where these women live, it's really an extended family, or they have to live with their in-laws. I want to know whether you've experienced that with the programs in your area and how you address that.
Oh, Roshana, you couldn't hear her?
No, I couldn't hear her. Can you repeat that?
I'm sorry. The question was, she also works with microfinance for a Vietnamese and Cambodian group,
okay. But
has found that often when the money is given to the women, it's then taken away by their husbands. And she wants to know if you also have that problem and how you deal with it.
I think the way we work with it, we work with the family because poverty affects the entire family, and you can't change society 180 degrees by force. You have to work within the tenets of a culture. So the way we do it, we work with the entire family. We sit down with them, and using the theory of rational economics, we believe that poor households know where best to use the money. If we ask them to use the money for just women-based businesses and not family enterprises or businesses where men are taking the lead, then we are forcing them to actually lie to us. So what we do is we sit with them and we make a whole business plan and we say, okay, you want to use it for a family enterprise, but we want women to be involved in it. That's one. The other thing is it's not just microfinance. It's not just about credit. If we limit it to credit, then we are limiting the growth potential and wealth creation of the household. We also have to talk about savings. And let me tell you, if you go home and you talk to all the men in the communities, they will tell you women are the thrifty ones. Women are the ones they save. So in our case, what we did was we started with credit, which was the easier thing to do because we were a not-for-profit and we didn't have the legal status to set up to take deposits. And we have now set up a microfinance bank, which is a regulated entity by our central bank. And that allows us to take deposits. And in 1 year, we have actually opened up 50,000 accounts with women under the premise that these accounts and our accounts are in the names of women. The third thing you need to do is financial education. Very, very important. And just don't target the financial education towards men, towards women, but also towards men. It is very, the imperative, you know, you can't do microfinance without the imperative of awareness raising.
We're going to fix your headphones now. So in case we have another caller for you, you can hear them. And in the meantime, let me ask Andisha, how you see the war in your country. Is this simply the worst of times in Afghanistan because of the violence, or is it both a time of danger and a time of opportunity?
I think the situation gets worse in Afghanistan day by day. The bomb blasts on the streets, the kidnapping of the poor people, existence of extremists and the government make the situation really very tough for the people. But in the meantime, there is opportunity for women and for other population of society to start some works and to do jobs. I set up my nonprofit in 2002 with a small group of children. Now it grows. I start, in fact, with one orphanage. Now we have 10. And I start with 35 kids, but now we have close to 500 children.
Do you take a position on the U.S. military presence? Is the U.S. right to be fighting with troops in Afghanistan and doing what it's doing there, in your opinion?
If we look to the couple of years the foreign troops are in Afghanistan, we should see what happened since they are there. In my point of view, or what I witness every day in Afghanistan, the situation gets worse. Taliban, or they get powerful day by day. They are more active now as compared to 6 years ago. They are more active. They do more violence nowadays. And
do you think your country would have been better off had none of this ever happened after 2001 and the Taliban was just permanently in control since before that?
I think the existence of any group, either they are Taliban or other extremists, it's dangerous for Afghan people. Of course, I can't tell if the Taliban would be in power still, the situation would be good. Mm-hmm. It's not. We know how dangerous it was, not only for women, for everybody in Afghanistan with the Taliban government. But the main point is to have. Doesn't matter if we have. It's important what kind of government we have, who we have in the government. There is some people in the government who have the same mind as the Taliban. Doesn't matter if they change their names or if they just shaved and put ties. It's not the point. The most important thing is what they are thinking. What is their mind in their mind?
Roshana, is Pakistan going through a similar battle over the education of girls, or not so much?
It really depends on how you look. Pakistan is a large country. It's a huge country with a very, very diverse set of people. And we have different issues in different areas. If we look at education of girls, actually, let me talk to you about my experience. What we have seen, the moment economic empowerment of women takes place in the family, there is an immediate correlation with the number of children going to school. And what we've seen is that that decision is gender blind. If your child is of school growing age and you have that extra 100 rupees or 500 rupees to send them to school, you will send them irrespective of it being a boy or a girl. So I think in Pakistan, we have come, we've made strides in many, many ways. The problem is with the delivery of the education system. The problem is not with the demand for the education system. So we have to look at the problem in a very different manner. If we look at the delivery of the education system, the quality of education is very limiting. And I think as a country, if I was to do anything, I would just have the mantra of educate, educate, and educate. And that in itself will transform that demand into a positive change.
Before you both go, these global leadership awards that you got from Vital Voices this week, what can they mean to the people of your countries? Andisha?
I was really encouraged by this award, and it's not only, in fact, for myself, it's for all. They recognized the children of Afghanistan. The whole team we are working, my organization and the team working together, it goes to myself, to all the people we are working together. And, in fact, it goes to the children of Afghanistan and to those families who just sends their children to, they take them from school and send them to sell something to feed the family. In fact, this award goes to them. And
that's wonderful. And Roshana?
It was very inspiring. And I think one of the messages I want to give the U.S. government is that we have to invest in women. And I feel that was the message that came out throughout the award ceremony. And it was a recognition of the 1 million women that we have worked in Pakistan, who I would salute for their tenacity, their courage, and their mettle. So I think one of the things I would urge the U.S. government is to use aid smartly and make sure it goes to create a gender equitable world.
In the United States, to accept their Vital Voices Global Leadership Awards, Andisha Farid, founder of the Afghan Child Education and Care Organization, Roshani Zafar, founder and managing director of the Kashf Foundation in Pakistan, which supports more than 300,000 women with microfinance loans and, as she described, other services, education as well. Thank you both very much for making this one of your stops. Congratulations and good luck.
Thank you so much. It was Brian a pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, the new Manhattan DA, Cy Vance Jr., coming up next.